This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents The Four Winds by Kristen Hanna. Read for you by Julia Whalen. Prologue. Hope is a coin I carry, an American penny given to me by a man I came to love. There were times in my journey when it felt as if that penny and the hope it represented were the only things that kept me going. I came west in search of a better life, but my American dream was turned into a nightmare by poverty and hardship and greed. These past few years have been a time of things lost, jobs, homes, food. The land we loved turned on us, broke us all, even the stubborn old man who used to talk about the weather and congratulate each other on the season's bumper wheat crop. A man's got to fight out here to make a living, they'd say to each other. A man. It was always about the men. They seemed to think it meant nothing to cook and clean and bear children and tend gardens. But we women of the Great Plains worked from sunup to sundown too, toiled on wheat farms until we were as dry and baked as the land we loved. Sometimes, when I close my eyes, I swear I can still taste the dust.
1921. To damage the earth is to damage your children. Wendell Berry, farmer and poet. 1. Elsa Walcott had spent years in enforced solitude, reading fictional adventures and imagining other lives. In her lonely bedroom, surrounded by the novels that had become her friends, she sometimes dared to dream of an adventure of her own, but not often. Her family repeatedly told her that it was the illness she'd survived in childhood that had transformed her life and left it fragile and solitary, and on good days, she believed it. On bad days, like today, she knew that she had always been an outsider in her own family. They had sensed the lack in her early on, seeing that she didn't fit in. There was a pain that came with constant disapproval. A sense of having lost something unnamed, unknown. Elsa had survived it by being quiet, by not demanding or seeking attention, by accepting that she was loved, but unliked. The hurt had become so commonplace she rarely noticed it. She knew it had nothing to do with the illness to which her rejection was usually ascribed. But now, as she sat in the parlor, in her favorite chair, she closed the book in her lap and thought about it. The age of innocence had awakened something in her, reminded her keenly of the passage of time. Tomorrow was her birthday, 25. Young, by most accounts, an age when men drank bathtub gin and drove recklessly and listened to ragtime music and danced with women who wore headbands and fringed dresses. For women, it was different. Hope began to dim for a woman when she turned 20. By 22, the whispers in town and at church would have begun, the long, sad looks. By 25, the die was cast. An unmarried woman was a spinster. On the shelf, they called her, shaking heads and tisking at her lost opportunities. Usually people wondered why. What had turned a perfectly ordinary woman from a good family into a spinster? But in Elsa's case, everyone knew. They must think she was deaf the way they talked about her. Poor thing, skinny as a rake handle, not nearly as pretty as her sisters. Prettiness. Elsa knew that was the crux of it. She was not an attractive woman. On her best day, in her best dress, a stranger might say she was handsome, but never more. She was too everything. Too tall, too thin, too pale, too unsure of herself. Elsa had attended both of her sister's weddings. Neither had asked her to stand with them at the altar, and Elsa understood. At nearly 6 feet, she was taller than the groom's. She would ruin the photographs, and image was everything to the Walcotts. Her parents prized it above all else. It didn't take a genius to look down the road of Elsa's life and see her future. She would stay here, in her parents' house on Rock Road, being cared for by Maria, the maid who'd managed the household forever. Someday, when Maria retired, Elsa would be left to care for her parents, and then, when they were gone, she would be alone. And what would she have to show for her life? How would her time on this earth be marked? Who would remember her, and for what? She closed her eyes and let a familiar, long-held dream tiptoe in. She imagined herself living somewhere else, in her own home. She could hear children's laughter. Her children. A life, not merely an existence. That was her dream. A world in which her life and her choices were not defined by the rheumatic fever she'd contracted at 14. A life where she uncovered strengths heretofore unknown, where she was judged on more than her appearance. The front door banged open, and her family came stomping into the house. They moved as they always did, in a chattering, laughing knot, her portly father in the lead, red-faced from drink, her two beautiful younger sisters, Charlotte and Susanna, fanned out like swan wings on either side of him, her elegant mother bringing up the rear, talking to her handsome sons-in-law. Her father stopped.
"Elsa," he said, "why are you still up?"
"I wanted to talk to you."
"At this hour?" her mother said.
"You look flushed. Do you have a fever?"
"I haven't had a fever in years, Mama. You know that."
Elsa got to her feet, twisted her hands together, and stared at the family. Now, she thought, she had to do it. She couldn't lose her nerve again.
"Papa."
At first, she said it too softly to be heard, so she tried again, actually raising her voice.
"Papa."
He looked at her.
"I will be 25 tomorrow," Elsa said.
Her mother appeared to be irritated by the reminder.
"We know that, Elsa."
"Yes, of course. I merely want to say that I've come to a decision."
That quieted the family.
There's a college in Chicago that teaches literature and accepts women. I want to take classes.
Elsinore, her father said. "What need is there for you to be educated? You were too ill to finish school as it was. It's a ridiculous idea."
It was difficult to stand there, seeing her failings reflected in so many eyes. Fight for yourself. Be brave.
"But, Papa, I am a grown woman. I haven't been sick since I was 14. I believe the doctor was hasty in his diagnosis. I'm fine now. Truly, I could become a teacher, or a writer."
"A writer," Papa said. "Have you some hidden talent of which we are all unaware?"
His stare cut her down.
"It's possible," she said weakly.
Papa turned to Elsa's mother.
"Mrs. Walcott, give her something to calm her down."
"I'm hardly hysterical, Papa."
Elsa knew it was over. This was not a battle she could win. She was to stay quiet and out of sight, not to go out into the world.
"I'm fine. I'll go upstairs."
She turned away from her family, none of whom was looking at her now that the moment had passed. She had vanished from the room somehow, in that way she had of dissolving in place. She wished she'd never read The Age of Innocence. What good came from all this unexpressed longing? She would never fall in love. Never have a child of her own. As she climbed the stairs, she heard music coming from below. They were listening to the new Victrola. She paused. Go down. Pull up a chair. She closed her bedroom door sharply, shutting out the sounds from below. She wouldn't be welcomed down there. In the mirror above her washstand, she saw her own reflection. Her pale face looked as if it had been stretched by unkind hands into a sharp chin point. Her long, corn-silk blonde hair was flyaway thin and straight in a time when waves were all the rage. Her mother hadn't allowed her to cut it in the fashion of the day, saying it would look even worse short. Everything about Elsa was colorless, washed out, except for her blue eyes. She lit her bedside lamp and withdrew one of her most treasured novels from her nightstand, Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure. Elsa climbed into bed and lost herself in the scandalous story, felt a frightening, sinful need to touch herself, and almost gave in. The ache that came with the words was almost unbearable, a physical pain of yearning. She closed the book, feeling more outcast now than when she'd begun, restless, unsatisfied. If she didn't do something soon, something drastic, her future would look no different from her present. She would stay in this house for all her life, defined day and night by an illness she'd had a decade ago and an unattractiveness that couldn't be changed. She would never know the thrill of a man's touch or the comfort of sharing a bed. She would never hold her own child, never have a home of her own. That night, Elsa was plagued by longing. By the next morning, she knew she had to do something to change her life. But what? Not every woman was beautiful, or even pretty. Others had suffered childhood fevers and gone on to live full lives. The damage done to her heart was all medical conjecture as far as she could tell. Not once had it failed to beat or given her cause for real alarm. She had to believe there was grit in her, even if it had never been tested or revealed. How could anyone know for sure? She had never been allowed to run or play or dance. She'd been forced to quit school at 14, so she'd never had a beau. She'd spent the bulk of her life in her own room, reading fictional adventures, making up stories, finishing her education on her own. There had to be opportunities out there, but where would she find them? The library. Books held the answer to every question. She made her bed and went to the washstand and combed her waist-length blonde hair into a deep side part and braided it, then dressed in a plain navy blue crepe dress, silk stockings, and black heels. A cloche, kid gloves, and a handbag completed her outfit. She went down the stairs, grateful that her mother was still asleep at this early morning hour. Mama didn't like Elsa exerting herself, except for Sunday church services, at which Mama always asked the congregation to pray for Elsa's health. Elsa drank a cup of coffee and headed out into the sunshine of a mid-May morning. The Texas panhandle town of Dalhart stretched out in front of her, wakening beneath a bright sun. Up and down the wooden boardwalks, doors opened, closed signs were turned around. Beyond town, beneath an immense blue sky, the flat Great Plains stretched forever, a sea of prosperous farmland. Dalhart was the county seat, and these were booming economic times. Ever since the train had been routed through here on its way from Kansas to New Mexico, Dalhart had expanded. A new water tower dominated the skyline. The Great War had turned these acres into a gold mine of wheat and corn. "Wheat will win the war," was a phrase that still filled the farmers with pride. They had done their part. The tractor had come along in time to make life easier, and good crop years, rain, and high prices had allowed farmers to plow more land and grow more wheat. The drought of 1908, long talked about by old-timers, had been all but forgotten. Rain had fallen steadily for years, making everyone in town rich, none more so than her father, who took both cash and notes for the farm equipment he sold. Farmers gathered this morning outside the diner to talk about crop prices, and women herded their children to school. Only a few years ago, there had been horse and buggies in the streets. Now, automobiles chugged their way into the golden, glowing future, horns honking, smoke billowing. Dalhart was a town, fast becoming a city, of box suppers and square dances and Sunday morning services, hard work and like-minded people creating good lives from the soil. Elsa stepped up onto the boardwalk that ran alongside Main Street. The boards beneath her feet gave a little with each step, made her feel as if she were bouncing. A few flower boxes hung from stores' eaves, adding splashes of much-needed color. The town's beautification league tended them with care. She passed the savings and loan and the new Ford dealership. It still amazed her that a person could go to a store, pick out an automobile, and drive it home the same day. Beside her, the mercantile opened its doors, and the proprietor, Mr. Hurst, stepped out holding a broom. He was wearing shirt sleeves rolled up to expose his beefy forearms. A nose like a fire hydrant, squat and round, dominated his ruddy face. He was one of the richest men in town. He owned the mercantile, the diner, the ice cream counter, and the apothecary. Only the Walcotts had been in town longer. They, too, were third-generation Texans, and proud of it. Elsa's beloved grandfather, Walter, had called himself a Texas Ranger until the day he died.
"Hey, Miss Walcott,"
the storekeeper said, pushing the few strands of hair he still had away from his florid face.
"What a beautiful day it's looking to be. You headed to the library?"
"I am," she answered. "Where else?"
"I have some new red silk in. Tell your sisters. It would make a fine dress."
Elsa stopped. Red silk. She had never worn red silk.
"Show me, please."
"Ah, of course. You could surprise them with it."
Mr. Hurst bustled her into the store. Everywhere Elsa looked, she saw color. Boxes full of peas and strawberries, stacks of lavender soap, each bar wrapped in tissue paper, bags of flour and sugar, jars of pickles. He led her past sets of china and silverware and folded multicolored tablecloths and aprons to a stack of fabrics. He rifled through, pulled out a folded length of ruby red silk. Elsa took off her kid gloves, laid them aside, and reached for the silk. She had never touched anything so soft. And today was her birthday.
"With Charlotte's coloring."
"I'll take it," Elsa said.
Had she put a slightly rude emphasis on "I'll"? Yes, she must have. Mr. Hurst was eyeing her strangely. Mr. Hurst wrapped the fabric in brown paper and secured it with twine and handed it to her. Elsa was just about to leave when she saw a beaded, glittery silver headband. It was exactly the sort of thing the Countess Olenska might wear in the Age of Innocence. Elsa walked home from the library with the brown paper-wrapped red silk held tightly to her chest. She opened the ornate black-scrolled gate and stepped into her mother's world— a garden that was clipped and contained and smelled of jasmine and roses. At the end of a hedged path stood the large Walcott home, built just after the Civil War by her grandfather for the woman he loved. Elsa still missed her grandfather every day. He had been a blustery man, given to drink and arguing, but what he'd loved with abandon. He'd grieved the loss of his wife for years. He'd been the only Walcott besides Elsa who loved reading, and he'd frequently taken her side in family disagreements. "Don't worry about dying, Elsa. Worry about not living. Be brave." No one had said anything like that to her since his death, and she missed him all the time. His stories about the lawless early years in Texas, in Laredo and Dallas and Austin and out on the Great Plains were the best of her memories. He would have told her to buy the red silk for sure. Mama looked up from her roses, tipped her new sunbonnet back, and said,
"Elsa, where have you been?"
"Library."
"You should have let Papa drive you. The walk is too much for you."
"I'm fine, Mama."
Honestly, it sometimes seemed they wanted her to be ill. Elsa tightened her hold on the package of silk.
Go lie down. It's going to get hot. Ask Maria to make you some lemonade.
Mama went back to cutting her flowers, dropping them into her woven basket. Elsa walked to the front door, stepping into the home's shadowy interior. On days that promised to be hot, all the shades were drawn. In this part of the state, that meant a lot of dark interior days. Closing the door behind her, she heard Maria in the kitchen, singing to herself in Spanish. Elsa slipped through the house and went up the stairs to her bedroom. There, she unwrapped the brown paper and stared down at the vibrant, ruby-red silk. She couldn't help but touch it. The softness soothed her somehow, reminded her of the ribbon she'd held as a child when she sucked her thumb. Could she do it? Do this wild thing that was suddenly in her mind? It started with her appearance. Be brave. Elsa grabbed a handful of her waist-length hair and cut it off at the chin. She felt a little crazed, but kept cutting until she stood with long strands of pale blonde hair scattered at her feet. A knock at the door startled Elsa so badly that she dropped the scissors. They clattered onto the dresser. The door opened. Her mother walked into the room, saw Elsa's butchered hair, and stopped.
What have you done?
I wanted... You can't leave the house until it grows out. What would people say?
Young women are wearing bobs, Mother.
Not nice young women, Elsinore.
I will bring you a hat.
I just wanted to be pretty, Elsa said.
The pity in her mother's eyes was more than Elsa could bear. 2. For days, Elsa stayed hidden in her room, saying that she felt unwell. In truth, she couldn't face her father with her jaggedly cut hair and the need it exposed. At first, she tried to read. Books had always been her solace. Novels gave her the space to be bold, brave, beautiful, if only in her own imagination. But the red silk whispered to her, called out, until she finally put her books away and began to make a dress pattern out of newsprint. Once she'd done that, it seemed silly not to go further, so she cut out the fabric and began to sew, just to entertain herself. As she sewed, she began to feel a remarkable sensation, hope. Finally, on a Saturday evening, she held up the finished dress. It was the epitome of big city fashion, a V-neck bodice and dropped waist, a handkerchief hemline, thoroughly, daringly modern. A dress for the kind of woman who danced all night and didn't have a care in the world. Flappers, they were being called. Young women who flaunted their independence, who drank hooch and smoked cigarettes and danced in dresses that showed off their legs. She had to at least try it on, even if she never wore it outside of these four walls. She took a bath and shaved her legs and smoothed silk stockings up her bare skin. She coiled her damp hair into pin curls and prayed they would create some wave. While her hair dried, she snuck into her mother's room and borrowed some cosmetics from the vanity. From downstairs, she heard the Victrola playing music. At last, she brushed out her slightly wavy hair and fit the glamorous silver headband on her brow. She stepped into the dress. It floated into place, airy as a cloud. The handkerchief hemline accentuated her long legs. Leaning close to the mirror, she lined her blue eyes with black kohl and brushed a streak of pale rose powder across her sharp cheekbones. Red lipstick made her lips look fuller, just as the ladies' magazines always promised. She looked at herself in the mirror and thought, "Oh, my Lord, I'm almost pretty."
"You can do this," she said out loud.
"Be brave."
As she walked out of the room and went down the stairs, she felt a surprising confidence. All her life, she'd been told she was unattractive, but not now. Her mother was the first to notice. She smacked Papa hard enough to make him look up from his paperback farm journal. His face creased into frown lines.
What are you wearing?
I made it, Elsa said, clasping her hands together nervously. Papa snapped his farm journal shut.
Your hair! Good God! And that harlot dress! Return to your room and do not shame yourself further.
Elsa turned to her mother for help.
This is the newest fashion.
Not for godly women, Elsinore. Your knees are showing.
This isn't New York City.
Go, Papa said. Now.
Elsa started to comply. Then she thought about what it meant to obey, and she stopped. Grandpa Walt would tell her not to give in. She forced her chin up.
I am going to the speakeasy tonight to listen to music.
You will not.
Papa rose.
I forbid it.
Elsa ran to the door, afraid that if she slowed, she'd stop. She lurched outside and kept running, ignoring the voices that called for her. She didn't stop until her ragged breathing forced it. In town, the speakeasy was tucked in between an old livery station, now boarded up in this era of automobiles, and a bakery. Since the 18th Amendment had been ratified and Prohibition had begun, she'd watched both women and men disappear behind the speakeasy's wooden door. And contrary to her mother's opinion, many of the young women were dressed just as Elsa was. She walked down the wooden steps to the closed door and knocked. A slit she hadn't noticed slid open, a pair of squinty eyes appeared. A jazzy piano tune and cigar smoke wafted through the opening.
Password, said a familiar voice.
Password?
Miss Walcott, you lost?
No, Frank. I've a hankering to hear some music, she said, proud of herself for sounding so calm.
Your old man'd whoop my hide if I let you in here. Go on home. No need for a girl like you to walk the streets dressed like that. Only trouble comes of it.
The panel slid shut. She could still hear music behind the locked door. Ain't we got fun? A whiff of cigar smoke lingered in the air. Elsa stood there a moment, confused. She couldn't even go in? Why not? Sure, Prohibition made drinking illegal, but everyone in town wet their whistles in places like this, and the cops looked the other way. She walked aimlessly up the street, toward the county courthouse. That was when she saw a man headed her way. Tall and lanky he was, with thick black hair, partially tamed by glistening pomade. He wore dusty black pants that clung to his narrow hips and a white shirt buttoned to his neck under a beige sweater, with only the knot showing of his plaid tie. A leather newsboy cap sat at a jaunty angle on his head. As he walked toward her, she saw how young he was, not more than 18 probably, with sun-darkened skin and brown eyes, bedroom eyes, according to her romantic novels.
Hello, ma'am.
He stopped and smiled, took off his cap.
Are you talking to me?
I don't see anyone else around here. I'm Raffaello Martinelli. You live in Dalhart?
Italian. Good Lord. Her father wouldn't want her to look at this kid, let alone speak to him.
I do.
Not me. I'm from the bustling metropolis, a lonesome tree, up toward the Oklahoma border. Don't blink or you'll miss it. What's your name?
Elsa Walcott, she said.
Like the tractor supply? Hey, I know your dad.
He smiled.
What are you doing out here all by your lonesome in that pretty dress, Elsa Walcott?
Be Fanny Hill. Be bold. This might be her only chance. When she got home, Papa was probably going to lock her up.
I'm lonely, I guess.
Raffaello's dark eyes widened. His Adam's apple slid up and down in a quick swallow. Eternity passed while she waited for him to speak.
I'm lonely too.
He reached for her hand. Elsa almost pulled away. That was how stunned she was. When had she last been touched? It's just a touch, Elsa. Don't be a ninny.
He was so handsome, she felt a little sick. Would he be like the boys who'd teased and bullied her in school, called her anyone else behind her back? Moonlight and shadow sculpted his face. High cheekbones, a broad, flat forehead, a sharp, straight nose, and lips so full she couldn't help thinking about the sinful novels she read. Come with me, Else. He renamed her, just like that, turned her into a different woman. She felt a shiver move through her at the intimacy of it. He led her through a shadowy, empty alley and across the dark street. Toot, toot, tootsie, goodbye, floated from the speakeasy's open windows. He led her past the new train depot and out of town and toward a smart new Model T Ford farm truck with a large wooden slat-sided bed.
Nice truck, she said.
Good year for wheat. You like driving at night?
Sure.
She climbed into the passenger seat and he started up the engine. The cab shuddered as they drove north. In less than a mile, with Dalhart in their rearview mirror, there was nothing to see. No hills, no valleys, no trees, no rivers, just a starry sky so big it seemed to have swallowed the world. He drove down the bumpy, divoted road and turned onto the old Stewart homestead. Once famous throughout the county for the size of its barn, the place had been abandoned in the last drought, and the small house behind the barn had been boarded up for years. He pulled up in front of the empty barn and turned off the engine, then sat there a moment, staring ahead. The silence between them was broken only by their breathing and the tick of the dying engine. He turned off the headlights and opened his door, then came around to open hers. She looked at him, watched him reach out and take her hand and help her out of the truck. He could have taken a step back, but he didn't, and so she could smell the whiskey on his breath and the lavender his mother must have used in ironing or washing his shirt. He smiled at her, and she smiled back, feeling hopeful. He spread a pair of quilts out in the wooden bed of the truck, and they climbed in. They lay side by side, staring up at the immense, star-splattered night sky.
How old are you?
Elsa asked.
18, but my mother treats me as if I'm a kid. I had to sneak out to be here tonight. She worries too much about what people think. You're lucky.
Lucky?
You can walk around by yourself at night in that dress without a chaperone.
My father is none too happy about it, I can tell you.
But you did it. You broke away. Do you ever think life must be bigger than what we see here, Elsa?
I do, she said.
I mean, somewhere people our age are drinking bathtub gin and dancing to jazz music. Women are smoking in public.
He sighed.
And here we are.
I cut my hair off, she said. You would have thought I killed someone the way my father reacted.
The old are just old. My folks came here from Sicily with only a few bucks. They tell me the story all the time and show me their lucky penny, as if it's lucky to end up here.
You're a man, Raffaello. You can do anything. Go anywhere.
Call me Rafe. My mom says it sounds more American, but if they cared so much about being American, they should have named me George or Lincoln.
He sighed.
It sure is nice to say these things out loud for once. You're a good listener, Else.
Thank you, Rafe.
He rolled onto his side. She felt his gaze on her face and tried to keep breathing evenly.
Can I kiss you, Elsa?
She could barely nod. He leaned over and kissed her cheek. His lips softened against her skin. At the touch, she felt herself come alive. He trailed kisses along her throat, and it made her want to touch him, but she didn't dare. Good women almost certainly didn't do such things.
Can I do more, Elsa?
You mean
love you?
Elsa had dreamed of a moment like this, prayed for it, sculpted it out of scraps from the books she'd read, but now it was here, real. A man was asking to love her.
Yes,
she whispered.
Are you sure?
She nodded. He drew back, fumbled with his belt, undid it, pulled it free, and threw it. The buckle clacked against the side of the truck as he pulled off his pants. He pushed up her red silk dress. It slid up her body, tickling, arousing her. She saw her bare legs in the moonlight as he pulled down her bloomers. Warm night air touched her, made her shiver. She held her legs together until he eased them apart and climbed on top of her. Sweet God. She closed her eyes, and he thrust himself inside of her. It hurt so badly she cried out. Elsa clamped her mouth shut to stay silent. He groaned and shuddered and went limp on top of her. She felt his heavy breath in the crook of her neck. He rolled off her, but remained close.
Wowza, he said.
It sounded as if there were a smile in his voice, but how could that be? She must have done something wrong. That couldn't be it.
You're something special, Elsa, he said.
It was good?
She dared to ask.
It was great, he said.
She wanted to roll onto her side and study his face, kiss him. These stars she'd seen a million times, he was something new, and he'd wanted her. The effect of that was a staggering upheaval to her world, an opportunity she'd never really imagined. Can I love you? He'd asked. Maybe they would fall asleep together, and...
Well, I reckon I'd best get you home, Else. My dad will tan my hide if I'm not on the tractor at dawn. We're plowing up another 120 acres tomorrow to plant more wheat.
Oh, she said. Right. Of course.
Elsa closed the truck door and stared through the open window at Rafe, who smiled, slowly raised his hand, and then drove away. What kind of goodbye was it? Would he want to see her again? Look at him. Of course not. Besides, he lived in Lonesome Tree. That was 30 miles away. And if she did happen to see him in Dalhart, it wouldn't matter. He was Italian, Catholic, young. Nothing about him was acceptable to her family. She opened the gate and entered her mother's fragrant world. From now on, blooming night jasmine would always make Elsa think of him. At the house, she opened the front door and stepped into the shadowy parlor. As she closed the door, she heard a creaking sound and she stopped. Moonlight bled through the window. She saw her father standing by the Victrola.
Who are you?
He said, coming toward her. Elsa's beaded silver headband slipped down. She pushed it back up.
Your daughter.
Damn right. My father fought to make Texas a part of the United States. He joined the Rangers and fought in Laredo and was shot and nearly died. Our blood is in this ground.
Yes, I know, but...
Elsa didn't see his hand come up until it was too close to duck. He cracked her across the jaw so hard she lost her balance and fell to the floor. She scrambled back into the corner to get away.
Papa!
You shame us. Get out of my sight.
Elsa lurched to her feet, ran up the stairs, and slammed her bedroom door shut. With shaking hands, she lit the lamp by her bed and undressed. There was a red mark above her breast. Had Rafe done that? A bruise was already discoloring her jaw, and her hair was a mess from lovemaking, if that was what it could be called. Even so, she would do it again if she could. She would let her father hit her, yell at her, slander her, or disinherit her. She knew now what she hadn't known before, hadn't even suspected. She would do anything, suffer anything, to be loved, even if it was just for a night. The next morning, Elsa woke to sunlight streaming through the open window. The red dress hung over the closet door. The ache in her jaw reminded her of last night, as did the pain that lingered after Rafe's loving. One she wanted to forget, one she wanted to remember. Her iron bed was piled with quilts she had made, often sewing by candlelight during the cold winter months. At the foot of her bed stood her hope chest, lovingly filled with embroidered linens and a fine white lawn nightdress, and the wedding quilt Elsa had begun when she was 12 years old, before her unattractiveness had been revealed to be not a phase, but a permanence. By the time Elsa started her monthlies, Mama had quietly stopped talking about Elsa's wedding and stopped beading scraps of Alençon lace. Enough for half a dress lay folded between pieces of tissue. There was a knock at the door. Elsa sat up. "Come in." Mama entered the room, her fashionable day shoes making no sound on the rag rug that covered most of the wooden floor. She was a tall woman with broad shoulders and a no-nonsense demeanor. She lived a life above reproach, chaired church committees, ran the Beautification League, and kept her voice low even when she was angry. Nothing and no one could ruffle Minerva Wolcott. She claimed it was a family trait, inherited from ancestors who had come to Texas when no other white face could be seen for a 6-day horse ride. Mama sat down on the edge of the bed. Her hair, dyed black, was drawn back into a chignon that heightened the severity of her sharp features. She reached out and touched the tender bruise on Elsa's jaw. "My father would have done much worse to me." "But no buts, Elsinore." She leaned forward, tucked a ragged lock of Elsa's shorn blonde hair behind her ear. "I suspect I will hear gossip today in town. Gossip about one of my daughters." She heaved a heavy sigh. "Did you get into trouble?"
"No, Mama."
"So you're still a good girl?" Elsa nodded, unable to say the lie aloud. Mama's forefinger moved down, touched Elsa's chin, tilted her face up. She studied Elsa, slowly frowning, assessing.
"A pretty dress doesn't make one pretty, dear. I just wanted—"
"We won't speak of it, and nothing like it will ever happen again." Mama stood, smoothing her lavender crepe skirt, although no wrinkles had formed, or would dare to. Distance spread between them, as solid as any fence.
"You are unmarriageable, Elsinore, even with all our money and standing. No man of note wants an unattractive wife who looms over him, and if a man did come along who could overlook your weaknesses, certainly he would not dismiss a tarnished reputation. Learn to be happy with real life. Throw away your silly romantic novels."
Mama took the red silk dress on her way out. 3. In the years since the Great War, patriotism ran high in Dalhart. That, combined with rain and rising wheat prices, gave everyone a reason to celebrate the 4th of July. In town, store windows advertised Independence Day sales, and bells clanged merrily as folks went in and out of the merchant stores, stocking up on food and drink for the festivities. Usually, Elsa looked forward to the celebration, but the past few weeks had been difficult. Since her night with Rafe, Elsa had felt caged, restless, unhappy. Not that anyone in her family looked closely enough at her to see the difference. Instead of voicing her discontent, she buried it and went on. It was all she knew to do. She kept her head down and pretended nothing had changed. She stayed in her bedroom as much as she could, even in the ragged heat of summer. She had books delivered from the library, suitable books, and read them from cover to cover. She embroidered dish towels and pillowcases. At supper, she listened to her parents' conversation and nodded when she needed to. At church, she wore a cloche over her scandalously short hair and made the excuse that she didn't feel well and was left alone. On the few instances when she dared to look up from a beloved book and stare out the window, she saw the emptiness of a spinster's future stretching out to the flat horizon and beyond. Except. The bruise on her jaw had faded. No one, not even her sisters, had remarked upon it. Life returned to normal at the Wolcott house. Elsa imagined herself as the fictional Lady of Shalott, a woman trapped in a tower, cursed, unable to leave her room, forever doomed to watch the bustling of life outside. If anyone noticed her sudden quiet, they didn't remark upon it or ask the cause. In truth, it was not so different. She'd learned how to disappear in place long ago. She was like one of those animals whose defense mechanism is to blend into the landscape and become invisible. It was her way of dealing with rejection. Say nothing and disappear. Never fight back. If she remained quiet enough, people eventually forgot she was there and left her alone.
"Elsa!"
her father yelled up the stairs.
"It's time to go! Don't make us late!"
Elsa pulled on her kid gloves, required even in this terrible heat, and pinned a straw hat in place. Then she went downstairs. Elsa stopped halfway down the stairs, unable to keep going. What if Rafe was at the party? The 4th of July was one of those rare events where the whole county gathered. Usually, the different towns celebrated in their own halls, but for this party, people came from miles around.
"Let's go," Papa said. "Your mother hates to be late."
Elsa followed her parents out to her father's brand-new, bottle-green, Model T runabout roadster. They climbed in, squished together on the heavy leather seat. Although they lived in town, and the Grange Hall was close, they had a lot of food to carry, and Mama wouldn't be caught dead walking to a party. The Dalhart Grange Hall had been decorated in layers of red, white, and blue bunting. A dozen or so cars were parked out front. Most belonged to the farmers who'd done well in the past few years and the bankers who had financed all that growth. Great care had been taken by the women of the Beautification League, so the lawn out front was a lush green. Flowers grew in bright profusion alongside the steps that led up to the front door. The grounds were full of children playing, laughing, running. Elsa couldn't see any teenagers, but they were here somewhere, probably sneaking stolen kisses in shadowy corners. Papa parked in the street and turned off the engine. Elsa heard music. Party noise drifted through open doors, chattering, coughing, laughing. A pair of fiddles played along with a banjo and a guitar. Secondhand Rose. Papa opened the trunk, revealing the food Maria had spent days preparing, food Mama would take credit for making. Family recipes, handed down from her Texas pioneer ancestors, molasses stack cakes, Aunt Bertha's spicy gingerbread, upside-down peach cake, and Grandpa Walt's favorite ham with red-eye gravy and grits. Every item designed to remind people of the Wolcott's deep place in Texas history. Elsa fell into step behind her parents, carrying a still-warm Dutch oven toward the wooden Grange Hall. Inside, colorful quilts had been used for everything from decorations to tablecloths. Along the back wall were several long tables filled with food, pork roasts and rich dark stews, trays full of green beans cooked in bacon fat. There would undoubtedly be chicken salads, potato salads, sausage and biscuits, breads, cornbread, cakes, and pies of all kinds. Everyone in the county loved a party, and the women worked hard to impress each other. There would be smoked hams, rabbit sausage, loaves of bread with freshly churned butter, hard-boiled eggs, fruit pies, and platters full of hot dogs. Mama led the way to the corner table, where the women of the Beautification League were busy rearranging the offerings. Elsa saw her sisters standing with the women of the Beautification League. Susanna was wearing a blouse made from Elsa's red silk. Charlotte wore a red silk scarf at her throat. Elsa stopped. The sight of her sisters in that red silk made her heart sick. Papa joined the men clustered in loud conversation beside the stage. Even though Prohibition made liquor illegal, there was plenty to be had for the men, who were a tough, sturdy group of immigrants from Russia, Germany, Italy, and Ireland. They'd come here with nothing, and made something out of that nothing, and they didn't cotton to being told how to live, not by each other, or by a government that hardly seemed to know the Great Plains existed. Although they tended to look a little worn, many of the men had plenty of money in the bank. When wheat sold for $1.30 a bushel and cost 40 cents to grow, everyone in town was happy. With enough land, a man could become rich.
"Dalhart is on its way,"
Papa said loudly enough to be heard above the music.
"I'm going to build us a damn opera house next year. Why should we have to go to Amarillo for a little culture?" "We need electricity in town. That's the ticket,"
Mr. Hurst added. Mama continued to rearrange the food, which had never yet been done to her standards in her absence. Charlotte and Susanna laughed with their pretty, well-dressed friends, most of whom were young mothers. Elsa spotted Rafe, standing with the other Italian families in the corner by a food table. His black hair, floppy on top and shorter along his ears, needed cutting. The pomade he'd used made it shiny, but couldn't quite control it. He wore a plain shirt, worn at the elbows, brown pants, saddle leather brown suspenders, and a plaid bow tie. A pretty, dark-haired girl clung to his arm. In the 6 weeks since she'd seen Rafe, his face had been further tanned by hours in the fields. "Look this way," she thought, and then, "No, don't." He would pretend not to know her, or worse, not even to see her. Elsa forced herself to move forward, hearing her heels click on the hardwood dance floor. She put the Dutch oven down on the white cloth table.
"Heavens, Elsa, ham in the middle of the dessert table, whatever are you thinking?" Mama said.
Elsa took the pot up and carried it to the next table. Each step took her closer to Rafe. She set the pot down as quietly as possible. Rafe looked over, saw her. He didn't smile. Worse, his gaze cut worriedly to the girl standing next to him. Elsa immediately looked away. She couldn't stand here, longing like this. It was suffocating, and the last thing in the world she wanted was to be ignored by him all night.
"Mama," she said, moving in beside her mother.
"Mama?"
"You see, I am speaking to Mrs. Tolliver."
"Yes, I'm sorry, it's just..."
"Don't look at him."
"I'm not feeling well."
"Too much excitement, I imagine," Mama said, glancing at her friend.
"I think I should go home," Elsa said.
Mama nodded. "Of course." Elsa was careful not to look at Rafe as she walked toward the open door. Couples spun past her on the dance floor. She opened the door and stepped out into the warm, golden early evening. The door banged shut behind her, softening the strains of the fiddle music and the stomp of dancing feet. She made her way through the collection of parked cars, past the horse-drawn wagons that brought the less successful farmers to town for events like this. Main Street was quiet now, bathed in a butterscotch glow that would soon melt into night. She stepped up onto the boardwalk.
"Else?"
She stopped, turned slowly.
"I'm sorry, Else,"
Rafe said, looking uncomfortable.
"Sorry?"
"I should have spoken up back there, waved or something."
"Oh."
He came closer, so close she could feel the warmth emanating from him and smell the trace scent of wheat.
"I understand, Rafe. She's lovely."
"Gia Composto. Our parents decided we would marry before we could walk."
He leaned closer. She felt his warm breath on her cheek.
"I dreamed about you,"
he said in a rush.
You did?"
He nodded, looking a little embarrassed. She felt as if she'd just edged toward a cliff. Below was a fall that could break her bones. His look, his voice.
She stared into his eyes, which were dark as night and soulful and just a little sad, although what he could possibly have to be sad about she couldn't imagine.
"Meet me tonight," he said. "Midnight, at the old Stewart barn."
Elsa lay in bed, fully dressed. She shouldn't go. That much was obvious. The bruise on her jaw had healed, but the mark of it remained beneath the surface. Good women did not do the thing Rafe had asked of her. She heard her parents come home, climb the stairs, open and close their bedroom door down the hall. The bedside clock read 9:40. Elsa lay there, breathing shallowly as the house quieted, waiting. She shouldn't go. It didn't matter how frequently she said it in her head, because not once, not for one moment, had she considered following her own advice. At 11:30, she got out of bed. The room was still stiflingly hot, but her window looked out on the Great Plains night sky, her childhood portal to adventure. How often had she stood at this window and sent her dreams into those unknown universes? She opened the window and climbed out onto the metal flower trellis. It seemed as if she were crawling into the starlit sky itself. When she dropped onto the thick grass, she paused, waited nervously to be detected, but no lights came on inside. She crept over to the side of the house and retrieved one of her sister's old bicycles. Climbing aboard, she pedaled out to the road and down Main Street and out of town. The world at night was big and lonesome in a way that locals had become used to, illuminated only by starlight, pinpricks of white in a dark world. There were no homes out here, nothing but darkness for miles. She pulled up to the old barn and dismounted, setting her bicycle in the blanket of buffalo grass beside the road. He wouldn't show up. Of course he wouldn't. She could remember every word he'd said to her, few as they were, and every nuance of expression on his face as he spoke. The way his smile started on one side and kind of slid slowly into place. The pale comma of a scar along his jaw. The way one incisor poked out just a little. "I dreamed of you. Meet me tonight." Had she answered him? Or had she just stood there mute? She couldn't remember. But here she was, standing all alone in front of an abandoned barn. Fool that she was. There would be hell to pay if she got caught. She stepped forward, her brown Oxford heels crunching on tiny stones on the road. The barn loomed up before her, the peak of the roof seeming to get caught on the fishhook moon. Slats were missing, fallen boards lay scattered. Elsa hugged herself as if she were cold, but in truth, she was uncomfortably warm. How long did she stand there? Long enough to begin to feel sick to her stomach. She was about to give up when she heard a car engine. She turned, saw a pair of headlights coming down the road. Elsa was so shocked she couldn't move. He was driving too fast, being reckless. Gravel spit out from the tires. His horn blared, "Auga!" He must have jumped on the brake because the truck fishtailed to a stop. Dust rose up around him. Rafe jumped out of the car in a hurry. "Else," he said, grinning, producing a bouquet of purple and pink flowers.
You brought me flowers?"
He reached into the cab and produced a bottle.
"And some gin."
Elsa had no idea how to respond to either. He handed her the flowers. She looked into his eyes and she thought, this. She would pay any price for it.
"I want you, Else," he whispered.
She followed him into the back of the truck. The quilts were already spread out. Elsa smoothed them a little and lay down. Only a thin thread of light came from the scythed moon. Rafe lay down beside her. She felt his body along hers, heard his breathing.
"Did you think about me?"
he asked.
"Yes."
"Me too. About you, I mean. About this."
He began unbuttoning her bodice. Fire where he touched her, an unraveling. She couldn't still herself, couldn't hide it. He pushed her dress up and pulled her bloomers down, and she felt the night air on her skin. All of it aroused her, the air on her skin, her own nakedness, the way he was breathing. She longed to touch him, taste him, tell him where she wanted, needed to be touched, but fear of humiliation kept her silent. Anything she said was bound to be wrong, unladylike, and she wanted so much to make him happy. Before she was ready, he was inside of her, thrusting hard, groaning. Seconds later, he collapsed on top of her, shuddering, breathing quickly. He whispered something unintelligible into her ear. She hoped it was romantic. Elsa touched the stubble of beard along his jaw. Her touch was so soft and tenuous that she didn't think he felt it.
"I will miss you, Els," he said.
Elsa brought her hand back quickly.
"Where are you going?"
He opened the bottle of gin and took a long drink, then handed it to her.
"My folks are making me go to college."
He rolled onto his side and rested his head on one hand and stared at her as she took a stinging, fiery drink and clamped a hand over her mouth. He took another drink.
"My mom wants me to graduate from college, so I'll be a real American, or something like that."
"College," she said wistfully.
"Yeah, stupid, huh? I don't need book learning. I want to see Times Square and the Brooklyn Bridge and Hollywood. Learn by doing. See the world."
He took another drink.
"What do you dream of, Else?"
She was so surprised to be asked, it took her a moment to answer.
"Having a child, I guess. Maybe a home of my own."
He grinned.
"Heck, that don't count. A woman wanting a baby is like a seed wanting to grow. What else?"
"You'll laugh."
"I won't, I promise."
"I want to be brave,"
she said, almost too softly to be heard.
"What scares you?"
"Everything," she said. "My grandfather was a Texas Ranger. He used to tell me to stand up and fight. But for what? I don't know. It sounds silly when I say it out loud."
She felt his gaze on her and hoped the night was kind to her face.
"You ain't like any other girl I know," he said, tucking a lock of hair behind her ear.
"When do you leave?"
"August. That gives us some time. If you'll meet me again."
Elsa smiled.
"Yes."
She would take whatever she could get from Rafe and pay whatever price there was for it, even going to hell. He'd made her feel more beautiful in 1 minute than the rest of the world had in 25 years. 4. By mid-August, the flowers in the few hanging planters and window boxes in downtown Dalhart were scorched and leggy. Fewer merchants could find the energy to prune and water in this heat, and the flowers wouldn't last much longer either way. Mr. Hurst waved listlessly as Elsa passed him on her way home from the library. As Elsa opened the gate, the cloying, sickeningly sweet scent of the garden overpowered her. She clamped a hand over her mouth, but there was no way to hold back her sickness. She vomited on her mother's favorite American Beauty roses. Elsa kept dry heaving long after there was nothing left in her stomach. Finally, she wiped her mouth and straightened, feeling shaky. She heard a rustling beside her. Mama was kneeling in the garden, wearing a woven sun hat and an apron over her cotton day dress. She set down her clippers and got to her feet. The pockets of her gardening apron bulged with cuttings. How was it that the thorns didn't bother her?
"Elsa," Mama said, her voice surprisingly sharp, "didn't you get sick a few days ago?"
"I'm fine."
Mama pulled off her gloves, one finger at a time, as she walked toward Elsa. She laid the back of her hand against Elsa's forehead.
"You're not fevered."
"I'm fine. It's just an upset stomach."
Elsa waited for Mama to speak. It was obvious she was thinking something. Her face was drawn into a frown, which was something she tried never to do. A lady doesn't reveal emotions was one of her favorite adages. Elsa had heard it every time she'd cried from loneliness or begged to be allowed to go to a dance. Mama studied Elsa.
It couldn't be.
What?
Have you dishonored us?
What?
Have you been with a man?
Of course Mama could see Elsa's secret. Every book Elsa had ever read romanticized the mother-daughter bond. Even if Mama didn't always show her love, affection being another thing a lady should conceal, Elsa knew how bound they were. She reached out for her mother's hands, took them in her own, felt her mother's instinctive flinch.
I've wanted to tell you, I have. I've been so alone with these feelings that confuse me, and he...
Mama wrenched her hands back. Elsa heard the gate creak open and snap shut in the quiet that had settled in between Elsa and her mother.
Good Lord, women, why are you standing out in this vexing heat? Surely a glass of cold tea would be the ticket.
Your daughter is expecting, Mama said.
Charlotte? It's about darn time, I thought.
No, Mama snapped. Elsinore.
Me?
Elsa said. Expecting? It couldn't be true. She and Rafe had only been together a few times, and each coupling had been so fast, over almost before it began. Surely no child could come from that. But what did she know of such things? A mother didn't explain sex to her daughter until the wedding day, and Elsa had never had a wedding, so her mother had never spoken to her of passion or having children, it having been assumed Elsa would never experience any of it. All Elsa knew of sex and procreation came from novels, and frankly, details were scarce.
Elsa?
Papa said.
Yes,
was her mother's barely there answer. Papa grabbed Elsa by the arm and yanked her close.
Who ruined you?
No, Papa.
Tell me his name right now, or as God is my witness, I will go door to door and ask every man in this town if he ruined my daughter.
Elsa imagined that. Papa dragging her from door to door, a modern-day Hester Prynne. Him banging on doors, asking men like Mr. Hurst or Mr. McLaney, have you ruined this woman? Sooner or later, she and her father would leave town and head out to the farms. He would do it. She knew he would. There was no stopping her father once he'd made up his mind.
I'll leave, she said. I'll leave right now. Go out on my own.
It must have been, you know, a crime, Mama said.
No man would...
Want me?
Elsa said, spinning to face her mother.
No man could ever want me. You've told me that all my life. You've all made sure I understood that I was ugly and unlovable, but it isn't true. Rafe wanted me. He...
Martin Nelly,
Papa said, his voice thick with disgust.
An Italian. His father bought a thresher from me this year. Sweet God, when people hear...
He shoved Elsa away from him.
Go to your room. I need to think.
Elsa stumbled away. She wanted to say something, but what words could fix this? She walked up the porch steps and into the house. Maria stood in the archway to the kitchen, holding a silver candlestick and a rag.
Miss Walcott, are you all right?
No, Maria, I'm not.
Elsa ran upstairs to her room. She felt the start of tears and denied herself the relief they promised. She touched her flat, nearly concave stomach. She couldn't imagine a baby in her, growing secretly. Surely a woman would know such a thing. An hour passed, then another. What were they talking about, her parents? What would they do to her? Beat her? Lock her away? Call the police and report a fictitious crime? She paced. She sat. She paced again. Outside her window, she saw evening start to fall. They would throw her out,
and she would wander the Great Plains, destitute and ruined, until it was time for her to give birth, which she would do alone, in squalor, and her body would give out on her at last. She would die in childbirth. So would the baby. Stop it. Her parents wouldn't do that to her. They couldn't. They loved her. At last, the bedroom door opened. Mama stood there, looking unusually harried and discomfited.
Pack a bag, Elsa.
Where am I going? Will it be like Gertrude Ranke? She was gone for months after that scandal with Theodore. Then she came home, and no one ever said a thing about it.
Pack your bag.
Elsa knelt beside her bed and pulled out her suitcase. The last time it had been used was when she went to the hospital in Amarillo, 11 years ago. She pulled clothes from her closet without thought or design and folded them into her open suitcase. Elsa stared at her overstuffed bookcase. Books lay on top, were stacked on the floor beside it. More books covered her nightstand. Asking her to choose among them was like having to choose between air and water.
I haven't all day to wait, Mama said.
Elsa picked out The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, Sense and Sensibility, Jane Eyre, and Wuthering Heights. She left The Age of Innocence, which, in a way, had started all of this. She put the 4 novels in her suitcase and clasped it shut.
No Bible, I see. Come, Mama said. Let's go.
Elsa followed her mother out of the house. They crossed through the garden and approached Papa, who stood by the roadster.
It can't come back on us, Eugene, Mama said. She'll have to marry him.
Elsa stopped.
Marry him?
In all the hours she'd had to imagine her terrible fate, this had not even occurred to her.
You can't be serious. He's only 18.
Mama made a sound of disgust. Papa opened the passenger door and waited impatiently for Elsa to get into the car. As soon as she was seated, he slammed her door, took his place in the driver's seat, and started the engine.
Just take me to the train station.
Papa turned on his headlights.
You afraid your Italian won't want you? Too late, Missy. You won't simply disappear, oh no. You will face the consequences of your sin.
A few miles out of Dalhart, there was nothing to see but the yellow beams of the twin headlights. Every minute, every mile, tightened Elsa's fear until she felt she might simply break apart. Lonesome Tree was a nothing little town tucked up toward the Oklahoma border. They blew through it at 20 miles per hour. 2 miles later, the headlights shone on a mailbox that read, Martinelli. Papa turned onto a long dirt driveway, which was lined on both sides by cottonwood trees and fenced with barbed wire attached to whatever wood the Martinellis had been able to find in this mostly treeless land. The car pulled into a well-tended yard and stopped in front of a whitewashed farmhouse with a covered front porch and dormer windows that looked out to the road. Papa honked his horn. Loudly. 1, 2, 3 times. A man came out of the barn, holding an axe casually over one shoulder. As he stepped into the glow of the headlights, Elsa saw that he wore the farmer's uniform in these parts, patched dungarees and a shirt with the sleeves rolled up. A woman walked out of the house and joined the man. She was petite, with black hair woven into a coronet. She wore a green plaid dress and a crisp white apron. She was as beautiful as Rafe was handsome. They shared the same sculpted face, high cheekbones, and full lips, the same olive complexion. Papa got out of the car, then walked around to the passenger door, opened it, and yanked Elsa to her feet.
Eugene, the farmer said. I'm up to date on my thresher payments, aren't I?
Papa ignored him, yelled,
Rafe Martinelli!
Elsa wished the earth would open up and swallow her. She knew what the farmer and his wife saw when they looked at her. A spinster, skinny as a length of twine, tall as most men, hair cut unevenly, her narrow, sharp-chinned face as plain as a dirt field. Her thin lips were chapped, torn and bloody. She'd been chewing on them nervously. The suitcase in her right hand was small,
a testament to the fact that she was a woman who owned almost nothing. Rafe appeared on the porch.
What can we do for you, Eugene?
Mr. Martinelli said.
Your boy has ruined my daughter, Tony. She's expecting.
Elsa saw the way Mrs. Martinelli's face changed at that, how the look in her eyes went from kind to suspicious, an appraising, judging look in which Elsa was condemned as either a liar or a loose woman or both. This was how people in town would see Elsa now, the old maid who'd seduced a boy and been ruined. Elsa held herself together with sheer willpower, refusing to give voice to the scream.